Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to feature my recent conversation with Brianna Apgar. Brianna is a second-year student in our Executive MBA class of 2022, and she is also a member of the Executive MBA Diversity Committee. Brianna and I recently connected to talk more about her background, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, what led her to serve on the Diversity Committee, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my interview with Brianna Apgar. Brianna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brett. I'm happy to be here.
All right. It's great to have you here. Where are you calling from today?
I'm actually calling from my boss, Dr. Bishop's office in the C-suite at Carilion in Roanoke. He is quite amazing. I just came to this role on June 7th. And today when we were short meeting space, he immediately worked to accommodate me. So I feel that I'm at a really good stage in my life and learning from a really good influence and positive servant leader.
All right. Well, always nice to be in the C-suite. So,
however temporarily, yes.
For sure. So, well, first and foremost, how are you doing at this time?
I'm doing well. I definitely think that along with the rest of the world, it's been a big adjustment, both from going into our pandemic restrictions and now with them easing. I'm starting to give handshakes again. That's strange, right? I have to make sure that I know what I'm doing with my fingers and I grip, and it's weird. The whole world is weird. Just like right now, I'm weird. How do we speak to people again? So I'm in that awkward adjustment just like everyone else.
Well, there are whole ad campaigns based around this idea. You've seen some of maybe their beer commercials about people being a little rusty about going back out and socializing, putting you know, clothes on that are not athleisure or sweatpants. There's a lot of this going on. I think you're right that this is part of an adjustment. And even, you know, it was so much fun to be with your class, in a large chunk of your class, I should say, in Charlottesville a few weeks ago. But I was reflecting on that experience. I think that was the first large group social event I had attended in well over a year. I think probably 15, 16 months, something like that, which is, it's incredible to think about how nice it was to be together there on grounds. But I was struck by the singularity of the experience.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that has been a massive adjustment. I'm proud of all that we have been able to do electronically and the new ways that we found to innovate and to connect. I think that there's a lot of value in that. I think there's a lot of value in creating that flexibility and those options for people. But there is still something that's very tangible and real about face-to-face human interaction that's very special. So I love that now I'm getting to use new skills that I've learned and return to some of what I love in connecting face-to-face.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about you. So tell us about your story, your background. Who are you and what have you been up to before coming to Darden?
So I received my Master in Public Health actually from Virginia Tech. I'll just be upfront and honest about that. I was an undergrad at Tech too, but I did take a year off before coming back for that degree. One of the reasons that I love Tech was I do feel that there is that idea of up pro sim, that I may serve. That motto, I think, is very real. And I felt that element in both my undergrad studies in nutrition and exercise, looking out and how we can help the community with health efforts, as well as I did in my master's program. In my master's program, I took several classes in social epidemiology, which was not necessarily new at the time, but I think that toolbox and that verbiage that's become more common was less so. And so we were looking at the idea of not that people are sick, but why are they sick and how can we make them more well? And I was always just really struck by the idea that a zip code could be more important than a genetic code in predicting health outcomes. And so that began my journey on health equity. After I graduated, I was the population health health manager for two of Virginia's most far southwest health districts in an area affectionately called the coal fields. And so we were looking at many different things, predominantly looking at the opioid epidemic. We also looked at black lung, obesity, just different things that plague the area, But what really was interesting to me was how no matter the affliction, we could really drive change by uniting our community. And the people that sat on my boards, I had business owners, public schools, fire, rescue, police, health leaders, but it wasn't necessarily traditionally, as we may think, and just the hospital. It was this idea that this is a whole human problem and we need to look at it from a whole human perspective. Everything that goes into your life and how can we mitigate some of these concerns? So I really loved what I was doing, but I felt that I didn't have a strong understanding of healthcare operations. I understood the community side. So I took a role in long-term care as director of center operations for the Kunshaw Healthcare Center in Blacksburg. It's a 105-bed residential facility, predominantly known for skilled nursing and rehab, and it also offers outpatient rehab. But my role there was interesting because I was looking at operations and looking at drivers and looking at cost, but also trying to push all of our operations towards person-centered care. Are mealtimes reflective of what people best need? And how do I make that change, but not cost us a lot of money? And I think that's something that is really important to me and probably why I wanted to pursue an MBA for a long time. We do need to have a sense of what's best for people, and my career is in public service, but these organizations and entities are still businesses. And if you want to serve people, you have to be able to balance your books and you have to keep it running. So just driving that and looking at it from both sides, you can be concerned about business and you can be concerned about people both. They do not have to be exclusive.
All right. Well, you started to talk about your motivation to pursue an MBA. How did you get interested in Darden specifically?
I was interested in Darden for that aspect of servant leadership, which followed from that hokey idea of UpProsum. And rivalry put aside, it's wonderful that both schools have that strong connection. I think that's really special, and it's something that I wanted to continue to pursue in my education. And so I was looking at schools that had that focus in how we take our strengths and we go out and we serve our community and serve others. And it's also just a highly ranked business school. So I didn't feel like I was compromising. It was a best of both worlds situation. And I wanted to apply for several years, but I was worried that I was too young or maybe I wouldn't do as well on my standardized testing. So when I got in, I was just elated. I was really excited.
So here you are. You are now officially a second year student in the Executive MBA program. Class of 2022, you rounded the corner just a few weeks ago. Let's talk a little bit about your first year in the program. Were there learning curves? Were there adjustments that you had to make as you balanced work life and school, took on maybe some classes that were new to you? I wonder what this past year has been like.
I think that I had a very interesting two-sided coin adjustment. I had to learn to have the humility to accept the idea of good enough. I could no longer sit on community boards and excel at work and get straight A's, or we don't use A's, distinguished passes in every class. I had to learn to balance, because at some point we can want all these achievements in life, but also at what cost? Am I enjoying my own life? So I had to have the humility to realize that it was okay sometimes to just get through a class and to really decide what class do I need to glean the most from right now? What one do I need to really, really lean on my amazing learning team? You know, what's that balance gonna be? And that was hard for me because I want to win. I'm competitive, as so many people in business school are. So having that humility was difficult. And then on the flip side of that two-sided coin I mentioned, there was also a confidence and maybe a bit of a swagger that developed out in the workplace. I am young, and I have been very fortunate to have leadership opportunities. But I felt that attending this program, I had more credibility. So when I proposed a change, whether it be economic or operational, I felt that I had a stronger leg to stand on, and that I was a bit more understood in the room. Whether that just be my own confidence or accumulating some of those tools and that verbiage, I thought, I'm going to get through this program too. And then we're all going to be MBAs. And that's good. That's a good thing to have that confidence, but also tempered with that humility.
I think you're right. Humility is important. And everybody is learning something new in the executive MBA program. Many of our students come because they do not have a prior background in the subject matter. And we actually shared this blog post with our admitted students last week. It's actually from one of the accounting faculty members, Justin Hopkins, talking about accounting. And I thought this was such good advice. I'd not actually heard anybody ever put it this way, but there's a tendency for really talented people. You get into a new subject area and you want to benchmark to the person in the class who knows everything about the subject or a lot about the subject, right? The accountant in the accounting class, because people don't place out of classes here at Darden. But that's not the right benchmark. The right benchmark is, what have you learned? What have you acquired? What new skills? What have you gained through this experience? Not me compared to this other person, but my own journey with the subject matter. And, you know, that does take a fair amount of humility to sort of accept that you still have a lot of things to learn, that there's growth that's possible. But if you can kind of shift your lens a little bit, I think that that's really where you start to tap into the power of the program. You start to realize, yeah, I am growing. I am capable of doing more. I can add more to these conversations. I have more credibility now.
I think, you know, you asked me to describe a little bit about myself and my background in the beginning. And because as I am still adjusting to this world, I forgot to circle back that I just stepped into that new role, that new boss that I alluded to. And I initially turned this position down. I was unsure if it was going to be a good career move, getting out of a direct administrative operational role and shifting into a diversity, equity, and inclusion role. I had hesitancies. And I wonder if before Darden, I would have been able to say no and to help advocate for myself for what I needed, what I was looking for, whether that be regard to negotiation on paper or a softer negotiation of, here's what I envision for my career. Can you help me get there? What are avenues that you have? I don't know that I would have had that, truly just that confidence and that ability to maybe say, I'm not sure if this is right for me. That is one element of the program, also with regard to confidence, that I think is incredibly intangible and is worth every bit of the classroom experience to become a better advocate for yourself.
Yeah, and your point about good enough, I think, is an important one for any working professional student to hear, because there's an inherent messiness to doing something like, you know, you have a busy full life already and you're going to try to figure out how to fit school into it. So everything's not going to be exactly buttoned up. You know, you have a lot of people that come into the program, they're like an inbox zero type person. They have everything just so in their life. And then all of a sudden, and you go through this process of relentless prioritization, like what's the most important thing right now and what can I do? And you're right to keep the focus on your own sense of well-being through this, your own sense of happiness, because, well, that's why it's what it's all about, right? Ultimately, at the end of the day. And, you know, there are trade-offs that you have to make as a student. But I think it's important practice for people who are going on to do it. They're doing big things. They're going to continue to do big things in their career. What's most important to you?
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with that.
All right, well, let's talk about your current role. So you mentioned you're in a diversity, equity, and inclusion role there at Carilion. Tell us a little bit more about the role and the kind of stuff that you work on.
I'm really excited for this role because I mentioned that my career began with VDH, Virginia Department of Health, and it was very outward facing, looking at the community, how we could partner with the community. And then my last role was very much inward facing, looking at our own internal operations, working with staff. And what is most exciting to me about this role is that I have an inward and an outward facing component. So for our inward facing component, I work with what's called our employee resource groups and help to coordinate them and recruit for them. And right now we have 5 focused on multiculturalism, veterans, LGBTQ plus allies. We have a women's group, and then we also have a disability advocates group. And so I'm getting to work with employees, and then I hear their voice and their initiatives, and I bring them to my supervisor, who is one of our senior vice presidents and also the chief diversity, equity, and inclusion officer. And we voice to the Inclusion Council of Senior Leadership what we think our employees need or are asking for and how their initiatives can help drive organizational change. So I love that aspect, but I also get to work with the community. And that is always a great time, because sometimes, whether it be positive things that are going on or challenges, we can become so siloed, even within our own organization. The employee resource groups that I mentioned, the employees come from different sites, different hospitals within the firm, different departments. We have people from technology services. We have direct clinical practitioners. They're very robust in that element. They're not siloed. They break that down. But sometimes I can still get locked into Carillion. And it is so refreshing to be able to go out and speak to community partners and how do you do this? And how do you feel? And what's your lens? And what's your worldview? That richness is wonderful. And it's also just fun. There's something to be said about just getting to go out and connect with community groups. I got to go to a board meeting yesterday for a group called Local Colors, and they promote multicultural diversity in our community, and they have a massive festival every year. They even did a scavenger hunt while we were still restricted. That was tons of fun. The festival is great because of the food, also because of the people, but I love to eat. I'm getting to get to meet the Roanoke Diversity Center, which focuses on our LGBTQ plus population. And then I am getting to meet individuals at the Harrison Museum, which focuses on our African American community and their history, especially as how Roanoke moved around as a train city and how that was developed. And there are so many other community partners, which I will get to work with and meet too. So I love that I'm looking in and I'm looking out. I love that balance.
Well, the word that comes to mind is stakeholders. Yes. So many stakeholders that you're working with in this role. I would imagine that keeps things very interesting for you.
Never a dull moment. Speaking about that balance, Dr. Bishop, my supervisor, this morning when I came in, I was going over my schedule with him and the meetings that I was setting up, continuing to meet some other partners, some other people that I had my eye on. And he stopped me and he said, just don't burn yourself out. Make sure that you're engaging in things that you want to, that you think will be good for us, and you know, have some balance there. And, having a supervisor that's looking out for you is a really wonderful thing. And allowing him to say, pump the brakes and to listen to that and receive that and know that I don't have to be going 100 miles an hour all the time is great. Him allowing me to use his office while we're having a really busy day in the suite to do something for school is really wonderful. And it just brings full circle that idea of balance and that idea of leveraging our commitments and deciding what is most important in this moment and what should we look at for long term.
It's good advice. It's nice to have a boss that's looking out for you and keeping those kind of things top of mind. It doesn't always work that way. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Well, one of the things that was on my mind when we reached out to you about coming on the podcast here, Brianna, is the work that you're doing as part of the diversity committee. This is an initiative that really kind of started with your class, the Executive MBA class of 2022. I was curious to hear what attracted you to this kind of service. Busy executive MBA students don't have to take on leadership roles. They don't have to take on this kind of class service. And yet here you are, you have decided to. And so I wonder what attracted you to the diversity committee?
I think that I am attracted to the diversity committee because of our class. I think that there are many ways in which I could fill that DEI cup and that passion in the work that I'm doing in my community or through my professional work, but our class is really diverse. And I think that sometimes diversity can get degraded a bit. We can look at things as just skin deep. That is important. It is important to look at how many men and how many women you have a program. It is important to ensure that we have representation of people of color. That is all important. But we also need to remember that diversity is huge, and it's a celebration of our humanity and our life experience. And I love that our class has parents and it has spouses and it's got people like me who are a little bit fresher in their careers, and I can learn from the wisdom of people that are a bit more seasoned. There are people working in academia. There's a lot of healthcare folks, veterans, marketing, sales. That's really refreshing. And that's something that I want to be a part of celebrating, and also really get back to the idea again that diversity is a wonderful thing. We have a very divisive political rhetoric right now. And it's something that our society and in our class, truly our EMBA class, as we go out into the world as leaders, is going to have to try to find ways to unite people. And if we can rewrite the narrative on diversity and why it is valuable, because again, it is a celebration of our humanity, I think that's powerful for us as peers. It's powerful for us as people, and it's also very powerful to us as managers. So that's why I chose to get involved.
Well, incredibly powerful and personal reasons, it sounds like, for you. And you're right to note that in this program, I mean, from an admissions perspective, we share this all the time with prospective students, but our goal is to have as much difference as possible represented in the class, because first and foremost, we're thinking about the classroom conversation, the fact that this is interactive, that this is participatory, people are bringing all of those wonderful life experiences, work experiences, perspectives into the classroom, but it's also part of the broader community landscape in the executive MBA program. And we want that richness to be part of people's executive MBA program experience. We want people who are interested in learning from other people's perspectives and lived experiences. And so I'm so glad to hear you talk about that. I mean, in a typical executive MBA class, when I even just think about, you know, things like work experience diversity, it's typically over 20 industries. It's typically over 100 unique employers. We have people from around 5 years of work experience all the way to 25 plus years of work experience. And that's just the work experience end of things, not talking about any sort of racial, ethnic diversity, gender diversity, as you mentioned. I mean, all of those things are on our minds as we're building a class. So I wonder, Brianna, what are you looking forward to working on, you know, as you round in the second year with your classmates, you're on the diversity committee? What are you excited about?
So one of the things that I'm most excited about that we're working on right now is our Humans of Darden series. And we are allowing classmates to come forward with their stories. And this is difficult. If you know anything about Humans of New York or some of the other sub pieces that have come off from that main originator, vulnerability has a lot of power. And of course, it has a lot of power, but it's also something that we can shy from. But I think it's very real. I think frequently we think about ourselves as an extension of another. Brianna, previously as a director or as a manager, now Brianna as someone's report, as a daughter, as a friend. But the idea of being able to come as who you are, just who you are at your core, when you're not doing anything or winning anything or achieving anything or just working, that idea of who am I just at my being, in between my heartbeats, in between my breaths, do I like that person and do I need to work on that? And that can be a hard conversation, I think, to have with yourself. And it can be even harder to put out your own story to your peers. And there's things about our story that we're proud of. And there's also things about our story that we would rather not want anyone to see. And so I think, as is natural, getting the buy-in and getting this momentum going for this initiative for Humans of Darden is hard because people will have to be vulnerable. But I do have hope that it will uptick, and I think that it will have a lot of power for our class. I think, you know, again, looking at this as an MBA program, I was really taken that there was an article put out by Qualtrics that belonging was the top driver of employee engagement in 2021 in their study so far. And managers hold the key in shaping that experience. If you are not working on yourself as an individual, you can't work on yourself as an employee or as a manager. We have to become more comfortable with vulnerability. So I'm really hoping that initiative will have some power for our peers.
That's a great point. And vulnerability, it's not always easy to do in a graduate school setting, a professional school setting. You know, I think people do have these ideas, and it's mostly self-imposed that you have to be a certain way in terms of, you know, putting things out there and like these kind of curated appearances. But it, everybody's, you know, if you could be real, if you could be authentically you, you could be vulnerable around your classmates. I certainly like to believe that the Darden community is a place where you can be vulnerable and that people are interested in all of these things. And it is a safe space because there's no other way to have a transformational learning opportunity, sort of this kind of growth, this personal growth that people talk about on the podcast and elsewhere through the programs that we have here at Darden. And vulnerability is almost a prerequisite for that.
I think that vulnerability also allows us to break down this idea of binary that is dominating society, and I think contributing to a lot of the problems that we have. When I see the struggles that we're having, I think we get very locked down into ideas of zero or one. It's Republican, it's Democrat, it's men, it's women. There's this desire and wanting to fit with a side and put a label on it. And the more vulnerable we are with ourselves, the more we are able to have that full expression and say, there's a lot of different facets here. There's a lot to unpack here. And how can I connect with someone who outwardly may feel so different than me, but there may be a lot here going on that we're actually able to connect on. I think that our vulnerability helps us with that as well.
I think that's right. And you do make a great point about the charge as leaders, right? So our students, you know, the focus of the executive MBA program, it's around leadership development, ultimately, all of these things that we talk about, case method, enterprise perspective, all of these things that come up on our website and podcasts like this one, it's about growing as a leader. And our graduates, you know, even right now in your work lives, you're in diverse organizations, lots of different opinions, lots of different perspectives, lots of different experiences, backgrounds, all of those things. You have to figure out how to lead everyone. Right? Not just some of the people, not just a few of the people, but you have to have a way of sort of bringing people together and building consensus, that commonality of purpose. And to your earlier point, creating that feeling of belonging.
I'm still, you know, we're all learning every day. And I think that's an important thing to take too, is that just because I'm in a DEI professional role or someone is on the DEI committee, people are human and humanity is messy and we make mistakes, and having the, again, the humility to apologize or to move forward is a powerful thing as well.
All right. We tend to ask this the same sort of last question of our guests here, Brianna, and I'm curious what advice, piece of advice, tip you might share with our prospective student listeners as they think about their MBA journeys.
I think that I would tell them to focus on that two-sided coin that I mentioned earlier. Have the humility to get to a place of good enough, because no matter how much you are able to do, are you enjoying your life if you're trying to win everything? Can you even take the time to sit back in the glow of your accomplishment? And then on that flip side, have that confidence, get to know your peers, because I think that this program can do a lot for you. And perhaps this is on a different route, but have the courage to change your mind. have the courage to learn from your peers. And if something changes you or shocks you, explore that and unpack it a little, because I hope that that's the type of leaders that we're becoming, that we can have new information and we can change and we can grow. Life would be pretty boring otherwise.
It's funny talking with the faculty about the fact that when you're in class, you're learning in a few different directions, right? By the nature of the learning experience, it's a chance for people to actively develop, you know, public speaking skills, communication skills. The thing that people will oftentimes also talk about is that set of skills that people are cultivating, the ability to pivot in a way where you don't lose credibility with the conversation. So in the conversation with the other people who are participating, so new information is presented, someone else's perspective comes along, and it changes your thinking. How do you incorporate that in a way that actually you still maintain some credibility in the conversation? And you can say, you know what, actually, that's very interesting that you mentioned that. That is something that you have a chance to do in real time in this program. I think about that a lot, because that's not really how the world works right now. It's normally just two people talking at each other and not so much with each other.
It would be pretty radical if everyone were able to focus on connecting rather than being right.
That would be. I don't think we're going to solve that here on the podcast, but you know what? At least what I like to hear from current students and from alumni is that they found that the program was a space where they could have these conversations, they could engage in these kind of dialogues, because I think that is really what the classroom and the outside the classroom experience is about. You got 135 or so people in the executive MBA program, all kind of come here to grow and to develop. And to do that, you have to be willing to engage in those conversations. Well, Brianna, thank you so much for taking time out of a busy work day, for calling in from Roanoke. I love Roanoke. I lived, you know, north of Roanoke in Lexington, Virginia for a number of years. Roanoke was a big city to us. We'd go off to Roanoke to do all sorts of fun things. But I would say, you know, I'm also really excited by all the things that the diversity committee is doing and the conversations that you're sparking, and the fact that Humans of Darden is happening in the executive MBA program. We've had people on Experience Darden, the full-time MBA podcast, talk about Humans of Darden initiative there. It's great to hear that it's come over to the executive MBA program. Any last words you'd like to share as we sign off here?
I don't have any last words. Thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity this morning.
And that was my interview with Brianna Apgar, a second-year student in our Executive MBA class of 2022. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's E-X-E-C, MBA, at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.